right, let's start, guys. Parshas Bahar B'chukosah. We're going to stick on Parshas Bahar here. Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Chaf says, V'chi Somru. And if you'll say, Ma Nocho V'Shana Shviyas. He's talking about Shemitah. And if you say to yourself, what am I going to eat in that seventh year? Hein Lo Nizra V'Lo Nesef Tvua Seinu. We're not going to plant. We're not going to gather in our grain. What are we going to do? There's no way. How are we going to be able to survive? Says in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, V'tzi V'si Es Berchosi Lachem B'Shana Shishis. I will command my bracha for you in that sixth year. V'osos Es HaTvua L'Shol Shashanim. And the grain will end up lasting for three straight years. A special bracha is going to be given. Your sixth year crop is going to be awesome. But that's what's going to be. But there's a lot of questions in these psukim. First of all, this is extremely strange. The pasuk is almost getting into our heads. It's trying to say, like, what would you think if I promised you Shemitah? Shemitah in and of itself is a strange thing. That we're telling a person in an agricultural country, a country that's based on the agriculture of Eretz Yisrael, and we're telling you, we don't want you to plant or do anything for one whole year. And not just some people, everyone. It makes sense to leave your land fallow for a year to let the nutrients come back and allow it to go. But for everyone to do it at the same time is crazy, especially if you're basing everything on what you have as exports, as your fields themselves. That's crazy. Why would everyone do it at the exact same time? So here, the question is asked, so what am I going to eat? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, don't worry, your sixth year crop is going to be good. So Rashi in Yirmiyah Yud Zayin Pasukei says this idea. Says you got to take a year off. You got to be able to have that year where you can sit and learn and do your own thing. And it's a promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A promise that I'm going to take care of you. Nothing's going to go bad. Everything's going to happen. And yes, there are numbers that they go through in Eretz Yisrael. All these numbers that they say what happens when people keep Shemitah. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's just a crazy idea. The problem the Rishonim have with this Pasuk is how to define the 3 years. It says, Va'osas es ha-tvua l'shlosh ha-shanim, that the grain is going to last for 3 years. How is it going to last for 3 years? That doesn't make any sense. Why would it last for 3 years altogether? And what are those 3 years? So Rashi says, the grain will really only last for 2 years. Not for 3 years, but over a period of 3 different years. For example, when you plant in the beginning of the sixth year, that means you're going to gather in the grain by Pesach and Shavuos of that sixth year. For that half, you're going to have the end half of the sixth year, you're going to have your grain to eat. Then you're going to need it for all of the seventh year, and you're going to need it again for the beginning of the eighth year until you finish planting and you reap it in Pesach and Shavuos of that eighth year. Altogether, you're just going from Pesach and Shavuos of year 6 to Pesach and Shavuos of year 8. But that's year 6, year 7, and year 8. Says Rashi, that's your 3 years. It's not really 3 years. It's really 2 years altogether, but it's basically 3 years. That's the idea behind it. The Ibn Ezra seems to indicate that the grain will last a full 3 years, an actual 3 years. From Pesach Shavuos of the sixth year all the way to Pesach Shavuos of the ninth year, it's going to go year 6 to 7, 7 to 8, and 8 to 9. It's going to last that entire time. And the reason why is because of Yovel. If there's a 50th year, which becomes Yovel, then you're going to have Shemitah as year 49, then Yovel in year 50. You need the grain to last throughout the seventh year and throughout the eighth year until your ninth year grain grows. That's why you need it for 3 years altogether. That's the idea that Ibn Ezra brings down. The Ramban seems to say the exact same thing. It says it's normal for crops to last a year since that's what ends up happening every single year itself. Says the Ramban, the idea over here is that you won't need to hurry and plant or whatever. You'll take your time. Everything will work out well. And in the end, it'll end up lasting you for 3 years. It's cool. Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, in the words of the Pasuk, the words Shvius, Shminis, and Tshis, the seventh, eighth, and ninth year, are missing a yud at the end of the word. But the word Shishis has a yud at the end of the word to tell you that it's going to be a special crop. A crop that lasts much longer than it normally would, and that's why it's got a yud at the very, very end of it for that very reason. We need it to last for that long, says Rav Chaim Kanievsky. That's the idea behind it. Rav Chaim, Ksav HaKabbalah, from Meckelsburg, so he says an obvious answer, and it's just a really easy answer when you think about it. It's not about the food lasting for 3 years that you can eat it. It's that you need the seeds for 3 years. You need the seeds to last at least until the ninth year so you can plant this stuff. So you need it to last to eat for the seventh and eighth years, and the ninth year so you can finally plant it. That's the concept behind it. That's the idea why it says it over here. That's how the Ksav HaKabbalah puts it down over here, and that's why it's 3 years altogether. Fine. But there's another problem over here. When is this question being asked? When are you asking how are they going to eat from this field during this time? When are you asking this question over here? So the idea is like this. The Ramban says the guy is asking this in year number 7. Year number 7. Now think about it for a second, okay? You're looking at your field. You're like, what am I going to eat in the 7th year? Man nochal b'shana shvi'is. When are you asking it? Says the Ramban, you're asking it in year 7. It's already past the 6th year. You're now in year 7. And you're saying, what am I supposed to do? How am I going to eat this year? This is like it. My 6th year fruit is going to be up soon. And then what do I do? The Rush says this, the Dasakenim, the Barbanel. He's saying, what am I going to do? And he's not asking about the 7th year. Because the 7th year, obviously, you're going to eat what was planted in the year before. You're asking, what am I going to do while asking this in the 7th year about next year? What am I going to eat next year in that 8th year itself? And that's the real problem. He's not worried about this year. Obviously, every single year, if you're going to plant in the 4th year, then you're going to eat it in the 5th. If you plant in the 5th year, you're going to eat it in the 6th. If you plant in the 6th year, you're going to eat it in the 7th. He's not worried about that year. So the way to read the pasuk is, v'chisomru ma nochal. If you say, what am I going to eat while you're standing in Shana HaShvi'is, in that 7th year, what am I going to eat next year in year number 8? That's how they end up saying. Says the Kli Yakar, if so, that seems a little bit strange. We just said the 6th year was going to be a bumper crop, right? And it was going to last for 3 years. Sounds like the crop is going to be awesome. Why is he asking this after he just saw that his crop is awesome? Let's think for a second. In year 6, did he have an awesome crop that just filled up his silos? And he rented out storage facilities to get all of his extra stuff because he doesn't have enough room to put it? Yeah, the 6th year was a bumper crop. So why is he asking, so what am I going to eat next year? You have enough. You clearly have enough. You just said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, I'm going to make the 6th year fruit last for 3 years. That means there's a huge crop. So why would you ask this question? You know what you're going to eat. It's obviously there. The Kli Yakar says this doesn't make any sense at all. Why would you ask if you already see that everything grew? So the Kli Yakar says the answer, and we're going to go into this in a bunch of different ways. It's got to be a little bit different. You don't see a bumper crop. It looks normal. You've got a normal crop that lasted the amount that you expected to, but here's the difference over here, and here's the issue over here. It looks normal. Somehow it lasted for longer. The Hanukkah miracle. The idea of having a little bit of oil inside and for that oil to be lasting for days and days and days longer than it was supposed to be, that happens every single Shemitah year. Every single Shemitah year you get the exact same thing and the exact same effect. And what happens is just this. During this special year of Shemitah, you're going to have a normal crop that just somehow lasts for longer. The way he puts it, the way the Kli Yakar tries to say it over here, he's saying, in this year, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to let it be ochel kima misparach b'meyo. That means you're going to eat a tiny little bit of food, and it's going to expand in your stomach so that you always feel full. That guy, I don't know a person like this, but you just eat like a tiny little bit, and you're like, oh, I'm full. Thank you so much. I don't need any more. And you're done. And you really feel like you're done. It expands in the stomach so that it becomes as if you're full, as if you don't need anything more. That will happen all Shemitah year long. Normally, you eat a bowl of chalent. In Shemitah, you have a tiny spoonful of chalent, and you're like, I can't take any more. And you're full. Not because you just eat a little. It's that tiny little bit grows in your stomach and becomes everything you need. All the nutrients, all the vitamins, everything you need for that year, for that day, I should say, is all there within that one little bite. That's the bracha, says the Kli Yakar. And it's awesome. You won't have to worry about anything else. This is one of the brachas that's said in Parshas B'chukosai. It shouldn't last physically. It shouldn't be there. But it's a massive miracle that happens for you because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to feel full and wants you to feel like you actually have something. So when we look at it, when Hashem says that 6th year crop is going to last for 3 days, 3 years, I'm sorry, it's going to last for 3 years, it's not because it's a bumper crop. It's because the crops are not eaten as much as you would normally. You're eating less and less and less. Another concept he brings down is something called pas bisalo. When you have bread in your basket, you feel like you have everything you need. You don't have any worries whatsoever. He says, when a person feels like he has enough savings in the bank to rely on, he doesn't really have to worry about much else. I've always had that like feeling like, imagine, like if you have savings in the bank, let's say you have $100,000, $200,000 in the bank, just sitting there waiting for you. Nobody wants that, right? It's absolutely terrible. I'm not speaking because I'm not saying like somebody, I'm going to knock somebody down who actually has this. I'm saying, you look at that and you're like, do you really have to worry and say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please give me a little bit more? Again, you have what you need, and you have a couple $100,000 in the bank. It becomes like less reliance on Hashem and more of a reliance on the bank. It almost becomes a tefillah where you're davening every single day. Instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please give me parnasa, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please don't mess this up. Doesn't that seem like the tefillah would be? Like, Hashem, I did it. I got it. I have own a home. I got my cars. I've got everything that I possibly need. And I have a couple $100,000 in the bank. As long as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't mess this up, right? I'm going to be fine. And that's a feeling that some people get. And it's sad. It's really sad. But that, unfortunately, is the reality by a lot of people. It's pas pesalo. You feel pretty good about yourself. You don't really have to work very hard. You don't really have to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because you got everything that you have. Says the Kli Yakar, in the sixth year, he has all of his grain. He's feeling really good about himself. He's feeling like he has everything that he has. But if he doesn't plant the next year, he feels like he's missing something. In that seventh year, he technically has enough. The sixth year crop, says the Kli Yakar, may be a bumper crop. It may be a little bit extra. But when you see it diminishing and you're not putting forth anything more, where little by little you're taking out of your bank account and taking out of your bank account and you're not putting anything back, you start losing faith little by little. That's when you start asking the question, manochal, what could we possibly eat? You wouldn't ask it normally. You're asking it because you got to this point. Once you get to this point, that's the idea behind it. And this was why it was so difficult for Bnei Yisrael to get used to eating the man. The man was awesome. The man tasted like anything. The man came to them every single morning and could land on their doorstep. That was awesome. That's an unbelievable gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them. But you never knew if it was going to show up the next day. You couldn't save it. So you had nothing. Literally, you were going to sleep totally bare. Your cupboards are totally bare. And you're praying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give you man the next day. That's difficult. Imagine this. Every single day, you had to make sure your bank account was depleted. Everything was gone. I mean, some people are doing that anyway, right? But you have to worry every single night. You go to sleep. You have to check your bank account. It must reach zero every single night. And tomorrow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give me the parnasa that I need to survive for the next day. And then it has to go down to zero again. And then it has to go down to zero the next day. That's really, really difficult. Says the Kli Yakar, it gets difficult when that happens. And the mashal behind this pasuk is manocho b'shana shviz. You start asking that question when you're worried about what's going to be the next year and you don't see the effort being put forth or you don't have the ideas of what you need to be able to get there. Yeah.
What's wrong about asking Hashem to please help me save the money that I have?
There's no problem with asking Hashem to save. We're saying if you do this, unfortunately, people don't think that way. They're just going to say, I did it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't need much help. Oh, but of course, yeah, if you got it, then say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me. No. That's the idea behind it over there. Now, yeah.
Isn't the hospital concept just after this happens, the Shemitah year comes around two or three times, it's pretty much the same thing as Pasuk Sal, because you know it's going to last.
Because every single year you see it, so every time it happens. Now, that's good in theory. It's not good in practicality. As many times as I might find myself get out of the straits that I'm in and find the money that I need to get to the next point, you know, to get to the next level and move up a step, etc., that first time, the second time, the third time, even the fifth time, sixth time, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, but what if it doesn't happen this year?
You can't say that. You have some problems.
You shouldn't, right. But that's what the pasuk is saying. The pasuk is saying you'll say it because people always think this way, even though you shouldn't do it. It's just reality. Realistically, it's really hard to live that way. But of course, the people with the man, every morning they woke up and every morning they had the man. Except for Shabbos, obviously. But every single morning, they saw them on. So you'd think after a while, they got used to it. They didn't. 40 years later, they're still like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Like, that's crazy. But they still felt that way. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh really takes this positive task, and it's such a great lesson to be able to go through. There's two ways to read it. One is a question trying to understand why we're doing this mitzvah. If I keep this mitzvah, how will I survive? I want to keep it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I just don't quite understand it. We need to plant to have food to survive. I just don't know what to do. And the second way of reading it is just accepting what it is, right? We're doing this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm doing it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell me what to eat. I just need to know what I'm going to eat. One is sort of a like, am I sure this is going to work? And the second is like, I know it's going to work. I just need to know how. So when you're reading this pasuk, you can say it as, Manocho b'shana shviz. Hashem, I'm doing it. Tell me what to do. Or it's, what are we going to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is a crazy mitzvah. I don't really want to keep this in the first place. There are certain mitzvahs that are out there. You might think to yourself, I have no clue why we have to do this. So there are two ways of looking at that. And really, the truth is, this is the Rasha and the Chacham at the Seder. There's no real difference between, no real difference between their questions. The Chacham asks, what are all these laws to you? And the Rasha asks, what is this avoda for you? There's no real difference between that. One is mentioning laws, the other one's mentioning avoda, one mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the other one mentions this, one says Eschem, the other one says Lachem. Okay, you have enough vorts out there. But what's the real question of the Chacham and the real question of the Rasha? The real question of the Chacham and the Rasha is based on how they ask the question. You can ask a question in two different ways. A Chacham asks, Daddy, we're keeping Pesach, and I'm always going to keep Pesach. The Seder is awesome. Explain to me why we're doing this. Explain to me why we're doing this. I'm doing it. I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. But tell me a why. I want to hear more ideas. Give me an idea of why we're doing it. The Rasha is like, I don't get this. Why are we doing this? What's the point? What am I going to get out of this? I get nothing out of this. I don't want to be here anymore. And he walks out. The concept between the Chacham and the Rasha is just this. They're asking the same question, but they're asking it in two very different ways. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, right over here, this question can be asked in two very, very different ways. If someone goes into the mitzvah saying, listen, I'd like to keep it. This just doesn't make any sense. I don't know what to do. If you give me an answer, God, then maybe I'll do the mitzvah. But if you don't give me an answer, I don't really want to do it. You can't go into it that way. You have to go into it like a child to his father. Asking his father, like, Dad, I'm going to do it. Obviously, you're telling me to do it. I'm going to go ahead and do it. But explain to me why. I need to know the why. Explain to me what that is. I made a rule not too long ago in the Skokie Yeshiva dorms about something, was whatever it was, right? So there were two ways that people said to me, the two ways that people came up to me and complained about something. It was either number one, it's like, I'm not doing this until you explain to me why. And to that, it was just like, I don't need to explain to you why. That's not who I am. First of all, I'm a dictator and I do whatever I want, right? Second of all, there's no need for me to explain to you. I'm just not going to do it. There was another guy who said, I'm doing it, Rebbe. I'm sorry, but I do want to know the why. And to that guy, I said, I'll explain to you why. And that person I told. There's a very big difference. There's a major difference. And I did that on purpose. Well, I didn't do the bad thing on purpose, but I did this idea of how to answer this question on purpose because that's the way you're mechanech somebody. It depends on how you ask the question. You have to know this for work. You have to know this throughout the rest of your life. It depends on what you say to your wife when you come home and you're wondering why the dinner isn't yet on the table. You say, like, you sit there and you're like, if you go in and you're just like, why isn't the dinner on the table? Well, guess what? The dinner's not going to be on the table and you're having takeout that night. That's for sure what's going to happen. But if you say, hi, honey, what can I help you with? What can I help you with? Eventually, you'll get to the question of what happened, why there's no dinner on the table just yet. Now, again, I don't want to be like all chauvinistic and be like, you should expect dinner to be on the table when you get home if you're a guy. Okay, yeah, whatever. Each person to his own, okay? It just happens to be that my wife's home a little bit earlier than I am, so she's making the dinner. But for everybody else who's home earlier than their wife, you better make yourself and your wife dinner because that's your problem, okay? So let's get around that so I don't have to worry about that later on. The Or HaChaim says another miracle that's similar to the bumper crop, but it's not exactly the bumper crop. It's like a bit of a twist. The grain that grows in the sixth year is a normal amount, similar to what the Kliyukr said, but somehow Hashem makes it last longer. Everybody knows what happened by the Tzarfatit woman in Eliyahu HaNavi in Malachim Aleph. Malachim Beis, I'm sorry. Oh, it might have been at the end of Malachim Aleph. I don't remember. Seminary days have been a long time ago. So either way, so whatever happened with Eliyahu HaNavi and the Isha Tzarfatit, she had a little bit of katakamach, a little bit of flour, and somehow it just expanded. It lasted for longer. It didn't make any sense. The woman that came to Elisha that needed oil, she had all those buckets. She said, I need something. So she took the bucket and started pouring. As long as there were buckets there, she kept pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring. Lahavdil, obviously, the Baba Sali, when he would pour the arak to everybody who came into his room, he would pour and pour and pour and pour for every single person there. However many people were there, everybody got a full cup of arak so that they could drink it in front of the Baba Sali. It's, what is this, 30 years ago? 1984, 1983 is when he passed away in the Baba Sali. We're not dealing with so far ago. We're dealing with somebody right then. The concept, conceptually, this idea is right here within Shemitah. It's going to last. The word v'asas, esetzvua l'shlosh Hashanim, it's going to be made for 3 years. The word v'asas is a weird word. It means it will be there for 3 years. Somehow it's going to last. You're going to throw everything in your granary. It's going to be a normal crop. You're going to throw in your granary. And every single day, you're going to take some stuff out. And every time you go back, there's going to be more grain inside there. Can you imagine going into your cabinet? This happens anyway because either your mom or your wife takes care of this for you, and you know, and that's that. But you go into the cabinet, every time you go inside, there's always a box of cookies. Always. No matter what. You go inside, you finish off all the cookies, the next day there's a box of cookies. That's what it is. The grain that's in the silo never goes down. It keeps being there. It doesn't make any sense, but it's there. It's always there. You see it in the Gemara, Elazar Ish Bartosa, Ish Kfar Birtosa, who had this in Tainus Kaftalid. He threw a bit of grain into his silo, and then the next morning his daughter comes in and she sees this huge amount of grain that's inside there that it just grew on its own, so to speak. In theory, with the right emunah and bitachon, that can happen to anyone. And that's what happens on Shemitah, says the Orach Haim HaKadosh. The Orach Haim HaKadosh says that you wake up in the morning and there's just more grain. It doesn't make any sense. You didn't have a better crop. Just sixth year grain will just last. It'll just last. Not that it blesses in your stomach like the Kliyakar said, but rather it's just going to last. The Chassam Sofer says the exact same thing. Whenever you get to the last point, stop counting. You know what this would be like? It's like such a power. It's like you have a bank account. You put money in the bank account. Don't check your balance ever. This is what it's like. Don't check your balance ever. Just keep taking money out with your what's it called, your ATM card. And again, you only take out money for what you need. It's not like, oh, tchotchkes. That's not what you're doing. Or you're taking out like for extra snacks. If you take out just for what you need, the mitzvah of Shemitah would be like this. You'll always have enough money in your bank account. You don't understand how. You'll deposit as much as you have. You'll take out as much as you need. Not as much as you want, but as much as you need. And at the end of the day, you'll have everything you'll need. Everything will be there for you. You'll never have a problem. It'll be just taken care of, says the Chassam Sofer. I know it doesn't make any sense, but this is the bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make anything happen, says the Chassam Sofer, but this is it. And obviously, you know what Hashem could have done? Hashem could have done it without even doing Shemitah. There's no reason for that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make it with your seventh year aftergrowths. He doesn't need it to be the sixth year crop that lasts. It could be that the seventh year just grows up with grain in the field as if you planted the field. It could just have full crops of field, you know, stuff that's coming up from the ground. It could be that way also. Says the Chassam Sofer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to be your own stuff. It's better when you see it from your own handiwork. You get something yourself. Something's different when you do something like that. The Paritz Yosef says, we know there's no such thing as a bracha on something empty. When you have an empty vessel, there's no way. You need something for it to be chalan. But he said that's only true by the bracha of a Navi. The bracha of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu could be on something absolutely nothing at all. You don't even have to plant. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow you to have everything you need for what you need in that year. It's the craziest idea, but that's the concept. V'tzivisir brachasi, I'm commanding a bracha to happen to you. I'm giving you that bracha. You keep Shemitah, I promise you, you'll be taken care of completely. Eliyahu HaNavi once came to Rav Zusha Mehanipol. This story is told over in the name of the Noam Elimelech. The Noam Elimelech, who was Rav Zusha Mehanipol's brother, right? Rav Zusha Mehanipol's brother was Rav Elimelech of Lezhensk. If anybody's been to Europe, you know, so you go to Lezhensk. So the Noam Elimelech said this in the name of his brother. The story is told over. I don't know if the story is true, but the actual idea is brought down in the Noam Elimelech. So he said, Eliyahu HaNavi was there in front of Rav Zusha, and Rav Zusha asked Eliyahu the following question. It seems like Hashem was not planning on giving them a bumper crop until they asked. They asked, what are we going to eat? And then Hashem said, all right, I'll give them a bumper crop. I'll give them a big crop in the sixth year. I'll give them a bracha in the sixth year. What would have been, said Rav Zusha, if they never asked? If they wouldn't have asked at all, what would have happened? Right? They wouldn't have gotten anything? Would the sixth year crop have lasted? So Eliyahu HaNavi answered him, and he said, when there's a lack of faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that holds back the shefa, the tzinoros ha-shefa, the pipes of shefa that are coming down from Shemayim, it holds them back from coming through because there's a lack. You don't believe it's going to happen, then it won't happen. It's as if it's not going to happen. That forces God to give an extra bracha and to bring down a little bit extra in that case. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu ends up having to do. There's no choice over here. Had they not asked, said Eliyahu HaNavi, if they wouldn't have asked for anything at all, it would have been awesome. They would have gotten everything they needed with absolutely nothing there. There would have been no bracha whatsoever. Something would have happened and everything would have been just fine. You know what could have happened? I'm giving suggestions now. They wouldn't have eaten for a full year and they wouldn't have felt it. They would have been perfectly fine for a full year. A bigger miracle would happen. You're asking the question, so therefore I got to give you a bracha. If you didn't ask, it would have been automatic and it would have been awesomer. It would have been a bigger miracle. It would have been something so awesome you can't even understand it. But you asked. So therefore, all right, I'll give you a bracha. It'll be a little bit more natural. That's the idea behind it. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Dorash Moshe says, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would never give us a mitzvah that causes us to starve. He's not going to give us a mitzvah that's so dumb that people can't keep it. That's not what's going to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have done the following. He would have given us a normal crop, says Rav Moshe. And the normal crop would have been, again, like the Kli Yakar, it would have been Misparach B'meyav, Ochol Kima and Misparach Harbe would have been so much bigger in your body, or you would have been able to eat and eat and eat and grab it over there, or it would have just been that you don't eat anything at all. That you literally went a full year without eating at all. Says Rav Moshe, you don't understand what you lost out on because you asked the question. We see it by Avraham Avinu saying, Bama Eda, how do I know? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all right, your children are going to have to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. And so too over here, don't ask the question. Don't ask what I'm going to eat during Shemitah. Don't ask, how is this going to work? Hashem is telling you to do it. Just do it and don't worry about anything else. And if you would have done that, awesomeness. You didn't do that, now it's not going to be as awesome. It's going to be great. It'll be good. But it's not going to be as awesome as it could have been. The Malbim goes through this as well. He goes through about such miracles, the miracles that can happen for great tzaddikim, those that don't ask, the awesomeness that happens to them, the people that ask, it's not going to be as awesome. That's the Malbim and how he goes through what ends up happening. The truth is, it's so much better if there wouldn't be a bumper crop. If there's a bumper crop, right, and you have extra grain that you're not used to, what's going to happen? Some of that stuff is going to be guarded. You're going to have to buy another silo. You're going to have to rent another room somewhere. You're going to have to do other things. It's a lot of work to reap that much grain. It's almost as like, yes, I'm happy that I got a bigger crop, but that means I have to pay more workers. I have to work harder. I have to do a lot more stuff for that extra grain. It's better if it's less grain that somehow lasts. That's so much better. The greatest bracha in the world is that it's a normal crop and I don't have to do anything and it's right there. Chafetz Chaim says there are three ways that God works in this world. Naturally, that's like allowing rain to fall, the grain to grow in the fields, right? Being able to cook and bake and make things happen, etc. That's for everyone, obviously. And then miraculously, like the Makos, Kriyas Yamsuf, Bekiyas Yardin, when the Yardin split, stuff like that. That's for great tzaddikim, obviously. But there's a third way. Third way is through bracha. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands a bracha to happen. What happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a bracha over here? See, a miracle is recognizable and you see it as something. A bracha, you don't necessarily see. It's something where you say like this. This is what it would be. It's that you're trying to sell a house, right? But it's not selling. So you go to a great gadol and you ask him for a bracha. And the gadol gives you a bracha. And it happens to be he gives you a bracha right when springtime comes in. And therefore, the house sells. So you say to yourself, you can look at this in two different ways. You could say, well, the only reason why the house sold is because it's springtime now. And now that it's springtime, that's the normal time for houses to sell. That's the reason why the house sold. Or you could look at it as, you could say to yourself, no, that's not the reason why the house sold. The house sold because of the bracha. It looks natural, but there was a bracha given, and it wouldn't have happened if not for the bracha itself. You look at everything you do in life, it could be exactly that. You sit there and you're, let's say you're a vendor at a baseball game, right? And you take your vending stuff and you got your, let's just say it's water, because I didn't want to get around the whole thing of whether you're doing beer or hot dogs, which are probably not kosher, or anything else that you get out there. Let's just say it's water. And you're selling water, right? As you're going through, a guy gives you a 20, right? And says, keep the change. Right? $17.50 is your change, something like that. You end up keeping $17.50 or $16.50. You're like, wow, thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate that. That $16.50 is what? What is that? It's ki'ilu. You can look at it as, that's natural. I did a great job. The guy knows me. I've been serving him water for this long. So therefore, he gave me an extra big tip because that's what it is. Or you could see it as a bracha. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu could have given you a normal amount and he gave you a bracha to give you a little bit extra so you have something there. That's the concept, says the Chafetz Chaim, of how it looks through over here. And that's what we ask. Sim Shalom Tova Uvracha. We're asking a Kadosh Baruch Hu to give us a bracha every day. Yeah, we want lives that are natural. We want lives that are miraculous. But the reality is the best thing for us is to get a bracha from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's by far the best thing to be able to do. Sfas Emes says that the key to understanding life and to understand how things work is that miracles and nature are all the same. That everything looks the same. That when you see Shemitah, you don't see sixth year fruit as a bumper crop. You see sixth year fruit as a natural idea. And then all things in life are really miracles. The fact that I'm walking, the fact that I'm able to talk, the fact that I'm able to do anything, says Sfasem, it's all miracles. Every single thing is a miracle. And in that sense, everything changes. When you start realizing how awesome nature is, you start having miracles happen for you. These brachas that we're talking about will happen for you without you even trying. It's just there automatically. Shach says there was another great miracle that could have occurred over here if they didn't ask for anything at all. Had they not asked, fruits would have grown from the ground that you would be able to eat during Shemitah as if you had planted them. They would have grown from the ground. You know what it could have been? There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions that in the future, the trees will end up giving off gluskos. You know what that means? The trees are going to have cakes growing from the tree themselves, and you're just going to grab them off the tree and you're going to eat them like a muffin growing from the ground. So Rabbi Yochanan said that, some of the people made fun of him. Talmidim were like, yeah, seriously, you think that's really going to happen? To which, you know what he said back? Rabbi Yochanan said, it's at the end of Brachos as well, in the ninth parak of Brachos. Rabbi Yochanan said, we have that today. You ever had a portobello mushroom? Portobello mushroom? So my wife, she doesn't like eating bread on her hamburgers, so instead she puts mushrooms on top, portobello mushrooms on top, portobello mushrooms on the bottom. So it becomes like her sandwich. She has the burger in the middle, the mushroom on top, mushroom on the bottom. I'm sorry? No, you got to dry it out. You got to whatever it is. No, this is not a problem. So either way, but she takes it, she goes ahead and eats it. Those things grow straight from the ground. I know this is coming as a shocker, but mushrooms grow straight from the ground. Why couldn't it be? That's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. What do you mean? You have mushrooms. Why can't you have full sandwiches grow from a tree? According to the Gemara, there are four different opinions on what Adam Rishon ate when he was in the Eitz, when he had the Eitz Hadas in Gan Eden. Obviously, we know the Esrog. We also know the fig tree. We know grapes. It wasn't an apple, but the Esrog might have been an apple, Lephitosis and Tinus at the very, very end. But that's a mistake that they make over there. That's those three. But there's a fourth opinion. Anybody know what the fourth opinion is? Not grapes, not figs, not Esrog, but what?
A combination.
What? Not pomegranate.
Red.
No, it's wheat. Wheat. How is there a wheat tree? You can't have a wheat tree. That's not a tree. The answer is, it wasn't a wheat tree. There were cakes growing from a tree that he was able to pick off the tree and eat. They were like regular mushrooms. They tasted like bread. Something grew from the tree, and he was able to go ahead and eat it. You don't need anything else, says the Shach. If you wouldn't have asked any questions, if you didn't ask anything, ma nocho bashan ashviz, don't ask any questions. If you don't ask, you will be given those cakes. You would have had all those cakes, and it would have been awesome. Everything would have happened right there in front of you. You wouldn't have had to cultivate it. You wouldn't have to ground it down. You wouldn't have to do anything. It would have just grown right there in your hands, and you would have had it right there in front of you. A miracle right there if you didn't say anything. If you wouldn't have asked for anything whatsoever. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing, says the Shach. What could have been, and unfortunately we didn't get that bracha. People ask the question, and therefore it comes out right over here. Panim Yafo says, Zafla, it's also an awesome bracha. There's an unbelievable thing over here. There's a medrash that says, this bracha was not in the sixth year. Every single year grew a sixth more than it normally would. So let's say you're supposed to make 100 kor. 100 kor is going to be a little bit harder. Let's say 60 kor, just to make it easier. 60 kor every single year is what you're expecting out of your field. You got a big field, you're expecting 60 kor of grain. In year one, you end up having 70 kor of grain. Year two, you have 70 kor of grain. Year three, you have 70 kor of grain. Year four, at the end of 6 years, you have a total of 60 kor for every year, including Shemitah. 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. All together to have the 60, whatever it is, kor for Shemitah itself. It doesn't make any sense that it grew 70. But you're going to see it every single year, and it's going to build up until that seventh year where you need to save it. So you save a sixth every year. The next year, you save a third. And the next year, you do what it's going to be, 3/6 altogether, so a half. And the next year, you're going to do 2/3. And the next year, it's going to be 5/6. And then finally, in the sixth year, you'll have 2 full years of grain to use for the sixth, for the seventh and the eighth year. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant, brilliant shot, says the Panim Yafos. And that's the idea behind what the Medrash says and how to go about it. The idea behind it. He goes on over there, but there's so much more over here. There's another Chassam Sofer, another Nitziv that we're going to skip out over here. The Tzror Mor as well. But let's get into some of the major lessons that a person can learn out of this. Someone once went up to the Kotzker Rebbe and he begged him. He said, "Rebbe, you have to give me parnasa. I don't have anything." So the Kotzker Rebbe, he's the Rebbe of the Ger Chassidus, the Chidushi Arim's Rebbe. Kotzker was very well known for his short, curt answers, right to the point, exactly what you want to hear. So the Kotzker, he said to him, "Rebbe, I need parnasa. So the Kotzker said to him, "Daven." So he said, "Rebbe, I don't know how to daven." So Kotzker Rebbe turned to him and said, "Then you have bigger problems than not having parnasa." See, it's a really good call here. We wonder, and we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "I need parnasa, I need to make money, I need to do it." And we're right, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to give us parnasa. But the biggest issue by all of us is our inability to daven correctly. And that's one of the biggest things we all have to get used to. There is not a single kid I know that likes davening. There's not a single person that I know that knows how to teach davening properly. I don't know what to tell people. When people come up to me and say, "What do I do? I want to daven better. What do I do?" I don't know what to tell you. I honestly don't know what to tell you. I can tell you what's worked for me once or twice. I can tell you how to be able to write things down in your sitter to try to concentrate. But at the end of the day, I don't know how to daven because I never learned how to daven because nobody ever taught me how to daven. I've seen people daven awesome davenings. I've seen them daven tefillos that I'm unbelievably inspired by. But to do it myself, once in a while, I'll be in the mood. If something horrible is happening, my davening gets a little bit starker. That's what happens. But when everything's good, and I'm feeling pretty good about myself, what's my tefillah like? My tefillah's like, the, you know, like... That's what it is. Somehow I find myself at Modim, and I'm like, what happened to Kabbah Shofar? I thought it was there. I thought I had it somewhere, and I just kind of forgot about it. Did I say V'sein Tal Matzul Bracha? Did I say Berech Aleinu? Am I in Shemona Esra, or am I in Shema right now? It happens. It happens. People are like that. It's difficult. It's really difficult to get into davening. The biggest issue, and the one big issue that we're dealing with, of Ma Nocho Bashana Shvi'is, at least this guy is having a relationship with his creator. He's asking the question. He gets to ask, and he gets an answer. At least he has that. The Kotzker Rebbe is telling him, you have to at least be able to ask the question. Ayelas HaShachar brings a Sman Choshen Mishpat. It's in Beis Sifkat and Zion. He says, this bracha doesn't apply anymore since Shemitah is only Midrabanan. So the bracha doesn't apply. So if you see sixth-year fruits in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, it's not going to be bumper crops. And we already said, right, that it's possible. It doesn't even mean there's going to be a bumper crop, but that's the idea. Chazon Ish and Shvi'a says it 100% applies. The bracha applies at any time, even by us. And actually, you can see, normally you'd be able to see it when it goes around there. It's possible, though, says that Yael Shachar, this is Reb Steinman, that the only reason why there are sixth-year bumper crops nowadays in Eretz Yisrael is because of the bracha of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says, sixth-year crops will be bumper crops. So therefore, they are because the Chazon Ish said they would. Not because, it could be the Sma's right. It doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael anymore. But the Chazon Ish said it would, so it actually would when it goes through them. It's a really good thing. And our last thing that we'll say is that it's possible, the Chassam Sofer says, this applies to tzaddikim when it comes to Olam Haba. Think of it this way. It's a really cool line. Ma nochal b'shana shvi'is. Tzaddikim are always worried. What's going to be when they get up to the Yom Shekulo Shabbos, the seventh day up in the heavens? What's going to be for me? All tzaddikim wonder. Rishayim are the guys who are just like, I think I got enough. I think I got enough schar. I think I deserve to go to Gan Eden. It's a Russia. A guy who says, like, I don't need to do anything more. Well, I've got everything already. Well, what in the world do I have to do more? I'm learning. I'm davening. I'm doing what a Kodesh Baruch wants to do. I'm not stealing. I'm not doing anything terribly wrong. So, well, what's the problem? I wear tzitzis every day. I'm wearing tefillin in the morning. Right? What's the issue? I'm doing everything pretty much 100% the way Hashem is. A tzaddik is always thinking, Manocho Vashana Shvi'is. What am I going to eat? What's it going to be like in Shemayim? What's it going to be like in Olam Haba? Rabbi Victor Miller says that every single person, every day, should spend a couple seconds. He suggests 30, I'm suggesting 10. I'm saying you read as a doros. 10 seconds every day, thinking about Olam Haba. Just considering Olam Haba. You close your eyes, you sit down, and you say, what's with my Olam Haba? And you sit, what do you want? What do you want it to be like? Do you want it to be a beach? Sitting there with a pina colada, like a nice, cool pina colada, where there's a nice breeze, but the sun is beating down on you? And there's like an ocean right there in front of you, and it's Nias. It's like a separate beach. Maybe that's Ganem for some people. But like, you know, it's like a nice separate beach, and everything's beautiful. It's like great sand, and everything's out there. Is that your Olam Haba? Is your Olam Haba learning a Tosfos? Like learning it in depth? Understanding, getting the Marshaz Kasha like that, and a Pnei Yoshua, figuring everything out where you're just like, I got this. Is that your Olam Haba? Whatever your Olam Haba is, you spend 10 seconds a day working on what it is. Says the Chassam Sofer, this is the bracha. And if you do that, if you're thinking to yourself, what am I going to eat? What am I going to do? Says the Kaddosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to give you everything you need. Everything will happen for you. Get everything you need. The osis is a tool of Shalosh Hashanim. And everything will work for you when you get up to Olam Haba. Everything's going to be fine. You don't have to worry about anything. But you have to go into it thinking, Hashem, I need help. Then a Kaddosh Baruch Hu allows you to get everything you need. We should be zocher to understand this, to get this for ourselves, to be able to get the bracha of a Kaddosh Baruch Hu and get it for ourselves in everything we do.